McGeezy Will Fly, A Grandmother's Journey to Stop Line 3, Part 3 by Barbara Rhine. Back at Big Sandy, talking and laughing as I help cook our last group dinner, I wonder whether any of the McGeezy folks will show for our ceremony after dinner to mark the year's anniversary of George Floyd's death. I also marvel at the fact that the next day I'm scheduled for a 4 p.m. flight back from Minneapolis to SFO. The arduous trip is almost over. We eat, clear up, and sit down to do the Floyd ceremony. Then the door opens and McGeezy comes in. Tayshia and her daughters and her partner and their son, the musician with his intensity for ritual, others whose faces are familiar from the morning. There must be 15 to 20 of them, counting the kids. People scramble to make room, and everyone looks to Starhawk to begin the commemoration. Remember Starhawk, the second-wave feminist neo-pagan witch from back in the day? If you look her up, you'll find she's still active, writing and conducting ritual in earth-based spirituality. One of our grandmothers, here throughout, she has been a quiet presence. Now she talks about her own roots in Minneapolis, then leads the packed room in eclectic prayer. Tayshia speaks directly of her knowledge that her son, due to that blonde hair, will never face the dangers from the police that Floyd and so many others have known. Next, Starhawk gets us to begin with the names, all people unfairly killed by the state. Floyd, of course, and Hampton, and Grant, and Bland, and Rice, and Taylor, and Wright, and Castile, and Gray, and Garner. Emmett Till, murmurs someone, who then adds a couple more, not familiar to me, to the endless list. Phoenix throws in a refrain of indigenous names I have also never heard of. Others call out for the 6 million victims of the Holocaust, the innumerable ones who did not survive the Middle Passage, the countless more who were killed, body and soul, by slavery. My contributions are Fred Hampton, see the movie Judas and the Black Messiah, Lil Bobby Hutton, Black Panther killed in Oakland by the police back in the day, and Ethel Rosenberg, blazoned into my heart during my red diaper baby childhood. Maybe Julius was guilty of spying. Ethel most certainly was not. Eventually, though immunized, I find myself obsessing about COVID in this closed space, crowded with the children and lots of adults, young and old, who don't know each other's immunization status. I leave immediately when the ceremony's over, while others who are braver offer watermelon and ice cream and stay to hang out. Next comes packing, bed, and such a deep sleep that when the 6 a.m. alarm goes off, I return from a faraway land, rested and cogent, and able to navigate the driver through the chilly morning scenery back toward Minneapolis, and willing to take over the wheel as second designated driver when the first one needs her nap. And we find a parking place right next to the governor's mansion where our final demonstration will soon begin. We have blown up posters to hold up, including two of my own grandkids. We have photos of kids from around the world to tie to the fence. We have multicolored chains of hand-folded origami cranes and butterflies to drape from the spikes at the top. We have our 1,000 Grandmothers for Future Generations banner, and our Stop Line 3 banner, and our length of silk, a bouncy, buoyant, pure blue stream, now shortened and easier to handle. We meet in person the magical grandmother Ellen, who was the one to arrange for our 31 chairs at the welcome camp. We thank her more than once, and she cries each time. How pressed they are in Minnesota, she tells us. How much they need our company, our support. Other Minnesota grandmothers arrive, native and not. Folks from Minnesota350.org and Minnesota Interfaith Alliance of Light and Power. One live reporter is present, weighed down with camera equipment. We meet great-grandmother Mary, who had urged us to make the trip, but who couldn't come out to the welcome camp to greet us because of car troubles. We take in the 4 generations of her family, all dressed in indigenous red skirts, herself, her daughter, her granddaughter, and her 10-year-old great-granddaughter, who eventually sings for us all, a shy and tender melody about nature. Our own native spokeswoman, Pat St. Onge, calls upon us to care for the earth. She is our mother after all. Phoenix speaks for Megizi, informs us that it is the only true home she has ever known, and assures us with quiet fervor that they will stay the course, no matter what Enbridge does. Madonna Thunderhawk, Lakota grandmother OG, tells the young people how much she admires them and how we grandmothers will always have their back, as our elders have had ours, just by being present. Joe Meinholz, a white kid from Interfaith Power and Light, talks about his own grandmother being with him when he took a fall on his bike as a kid. He came up to her bleeding from his face. "Where does it hurt?" she asked him. "Here, right here." He points to the left side of his forehead. The crowd laughs. Such an obvious question. And then Joe's voice cracks as he tells us that is exactly why he needs us here, to ask him, "Where does it hurt?" and to care about the answer. Because Minnesota, he informs us, the place with the largest disparity between black and the white and the whole entire country, is hurting. Because this pipeline that cuts under our waters and through our wild rice territory to bring the dirtiest form of the very oil, the burning of which keeps sending the temps sky high, the waters rising, the western states burning and parching, the climate refugees mounting into the millions, the limiting of the future for all of our children and grandchildren, we all are hurting. Oh, forgive me, Joe, for adding to your words. This has become my own rant, as it does so often at home. So many times when a Minnesotan has spoken to us, that person has shed tears. Now, throughout this rally, my own throat expands. My own eyes are wet. The coordinating committee members lead the group in Holly Near's Thousand Grandmothers, the song that inspired our name. We include my favorite verse. An old woman holds a powerful force when she no longer needs to please. She can cut your shallow life to bits and bring you to your knees. We best get down on our knees. I always mimic slicing downward angles with a knife in both hands when I come to that highlighted phrase. So on a grandmother's short and tender video of the event, https://vimeo.com/558779216, that is exactly what I'm doing under my cowboy hat. No song sheet in hand, even though everyone else has managed to find one. A hot mess while the trip comes to its conclusion, just as I was going in. Exhausted again and weighted with worry for these beautiful, courageous Minnesotans as they sally forth to risk life and limb in this epic struggle. I drive the van to the airport and turn it over, then trudge with two other grandmothers through the huge airport to join the long security line to get onto my flight home. Three of us make it to the departure gate with a few minutes to spare. We cruise for food and drink, ending up with burritos, which we save for the flight, and identical tall IPA beers, which we drink immediately. Suddenly, we expand into fun and jokes, affections and declarations of fealty. I gaze at the faces of these two slight grandmas whom I had barely known at home, but who are lifelong companions to my spirit from now on. Each with her distinctive weathered fashion statement is lovely, absolutely lovely. What else can I say? We've done it all and emerged intact into conviviality before we have to fold ourselves into our separate cramped spaces, masked and strapped for the flight home. I'm frightened for all these young folks, emerged from an environment already degraded by oil, by gas, by colonial culture. Thousands more have joined them since our trip. The sheriff's cops are bullying them all, diving with helicopters to kick dust in their faces, arresting hundreds, using tear gas and rubber bullets, keeping them in custody longer each time. I worry about the physical and legal risks of going toe-to-toe with the ruthless Enbridge giant. But my fear, though, is not the point. The protesters' determined courage through all their own tears and pain, that's the point. And as for ourselves as grandmothers, accompaniment is the point. For as long as we can, however we can manage it, this is who we are. And so since I've been home, I've signed every electronic petition about Line 3 that comes my way and sent numerous letters through the internet to all the major players. President Biden, of course, but also phone calls to CEOs of Citibank, Chase, Bank of America, the Royal Bank of Canada. In the middle of the night, my husband and I are among the singers who keep company with those painting in the middle of the street's pavement by our local Chase Bank. Water is life. Defund Line 3. I have a bunch of artistic posters on the same themes, and I'm perfecting my skill at getting them up on fences and the walls of buildings, including those banks, out in full view. This I do during the day, telling myself I wouldn't mind being arrested. I wouldn't mind jurors who have to listen to my explanation of why I am engaged in this blatant illegal conduct at my advanced age, to see if they can tell me that what I'm doing is wrong. Yep, I seem to have reached a familiar conclusion once again. Struggle in the midst of pessimism and despair, it makes me tired, it makes me cry, and though I will never know how much effect my individual actions contribute, it makes me happier than passivity. McGeezy will fly.